Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. We humans respond deeply to the sight of a newborn babe. It's in our genes. Instinctively, we want to hold, love, and protect it. But things get complicated before they are born and after. For example, should or should not a woman have the legal right to terminate a pregnancy? If so, under what circumstances? Should the government have the right to prevent that? What duties do parents have for the well-being of their child? What duties do we have as a society? Here to discuss these serious moral questions is Greg Trude, Executive Director of Right to Life of Montana. Greg, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground. Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
I grew up in Fairfax, Virginia, Springfield, Virginia. Mother was, she worked several different jobs. She worked at a bank. She worked at some doctor's offices. My father was an engineer for a road design company based out of Alexandria.
You went to high school back there?
Yeah, I went to high school in Fairfax at Robinson High School.
College?
Originally at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. Crappy grades, joined a fraternity. Then I said, okay, this just isn't working, so I went in the military at age 23.
What branch of the service?
Army, U.S. Army.
When?
1979.
To how long?
To the end of 1981 for active duty.
If I was to ask you before you went into the service, who was that young man, what would you say?
Same guy that got out of the military, just grew up just a little bit.
All right, and who is he? He's the same guy. What are his core values?
At the time, at age 23, my core values were different than they are now.
All right, tell us about it.
Well, at the time, certainly what I do now for a living was not even thought about by me because, I was more concerned about being 23 and trying to figure out where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. And I thought I was confused at that time. And so I decided that enlisting in the U.S. Army Special Forces was the way to go. I think I was trying to be something that I wasn't, but it's something I'd always wanted to do. So that's kind of what I did.
So give us a summary of what happens next.
Got out of the military in 82, decided that I wanted to go back to school, so I ended up at University of Puget Sound in Washington State. Great school, nice small liberal arts school. Mm-hmm. Then I was a geology major and transferred down to University of Southern California. I worked for an oil company in L.A. While I was going to school. And instead of finishing my degree in geology, I was a semester away. I got plucked up by an oil company back in the D.C. area and worked in the oil and gas fields, the shale fields, in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio until about 1980, almost 85.
My understanding is you had a political career of sorts. Tell us about it in summary.
Well, I'll make it brief. I was living in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and there was a woman there who was a Republican congresswoman named Tillie Fowler, and I started looking at her voting record, and it was horrendous. And so I decided to jump in that race, and I did in 1996. I lost the election, but I was endorsed by every conservative group out there, NRA, Gun Owners of America, National Right to Life, Eagle Forum. And these are all things I'd never thought of, but I started filling out questionnaires. So through that, I was endorsed by National Right to Life. I ended up being on the board of directors for Florida Right to Life, and that in turn is how I became a lobbyist because I lobbied in Florida for 3 years before moving out here to Montana in 2002.
What led to you having a right-to-life position?
I don't think I woke up one morning and said, oh, killing babies in the womb is wrong. It had to do with, really, with running for that 96 House seat. And as I started filling out questionnaires, it made sense to me that abortion was wrong. So then when I got, after the race was over, I was asked to serve on the board of directors for Florida Right to Life and then lobbied for them. But like I said, I think it was maybe I was a victim of circumstances that actually got me into the movement.
Okay, but you decided it was wrong. Explain why. You obviously, you're involved in Right to Life now. You still think it's wrong. Tell me why.
Well, I think it has to do with maybe realizing what the unborn baby is, as if someone actually researches it. If a person was neutral, which I was, and you start looking at the questions I was asked about girls having abortions without their parents knowing about it, you know, the unborn victims of violence bill, and then you start researching, you know, an unborn baby has a heartbeat at 21 days. At 6 weeks, that unborn baby has all of its organs formed. Now, of course, you know, as I've gotten into the movement, unborn babies feel pain at 12 weeks. So I think it was a progress for me.
So your conclusion, since you're describing a sentient being in the womb, is that it's morally wrong to terminate its life, correct?
That is exactly what I believe, yes.
Okay. Is it ever not wrong?
You know, there's people, as far as my own personal opinion goes, yeah, maybe the life of the mother.
When you say maybe?
Well, technology's changed, Brian. Technology's changed where they can do a C-section in 30 seconds. So the rare case of the life of the mother over the baby is really minute, especially with technology.
I'm not asking
today.
You the question of minute. I'm asking you the moral principle. If the life of the mother is at risk, in the view of the doctor, is it right for her to terminate, to make the decision to terminate the pregnancy?
Absolutely.
What about rape or incest?
That is one of those questions, and rape or incest is such a small amount of babies that are aborted. I don't ever really myself personally venture down that road. To me, if the baby is a product of rape or incest, if you're going to abort that baby, do it with either the morning after drug or do it before the heart beats. But, you know, there's women that wait until they're 4 or 5 months pregnant, and then they decide that they don't want to keep the baby if it's a product of rape or incest.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Greg Trude, Executive Director of Right to Life of Montana. The fact that something's rare does not change the moral question I'm asking you. If a woman is a victim of rape or incest, in your opinion, does she have a right to terminate the pregnancy if she chooses to or not? Is it moral?
No, it's not moral.
Now, is that the position of Right to Life of Montana?
Yes, it is.
Now, Roe v. Wade and a later case, I think it's Casey, defines from the point of view of the Supreme Court, which establishes constitutional law in America, that a woman does have a qualified constitutional right, initially based on the right of privacy between her and her physician, and there's a balancing test about the state's interest in life of the mother and the fetus balanced against the woman's right to privacy, which is held to be an implicit right in the United States Constitution. You obviously disagree with both of those decisions?
Absolutely.
Put another way, you feel that the state should basically, with the exception, the one exception of the life of the mother, presumably strictly defined, prohibit abortion. Is that fair?
No, not really. I really believe that Roe v. Wade was a wrong decision and it should have been left up to the states. I don't think the federal courts ever should have ever been involved in that decision, especially since the woman who petitioned the Supreme Court for the right to abortion, the whole thing was based on a lie. I mean, she's come out and said that she was coerced into it. I think it should go back to the states, and I think each state should have the right to decide itself whether abortion is legal or not.
Okay, separate from the personality, which is irrelevant to the legal principle, and I say that as a lawyer, why does giving it to the states have anything to do with the moral issue? You still seem to me to be taking the position that whether it's the state or the federal courts, that you do not agree that a woman should have a right to an abortion. That is a violation of the fetus's rights. Fair? No matter who makes the decision.
That is absolutely fair.
Okay, so let's forget the state versus the federal issue and talk about the moral principle. Should the state prohibit with criminal sanctions abortion?
Let's back it up. Not with criminal sanctions, no. Absolutely
not?
Not.
Why not? I don't understand. If you're taking, I assume you're basing this on taking the life of a human. Taking the life of a human, other than in self-defense, is generally considered a crime. Why is this not a crime?
People make decisions based on emotion. And I really believe that when women do abortions, they do it based on emotion. And I think that most of the time when those women do have an abortion, they realize afterwards that it was a mistake, especially when they get pregnant again later on down the road. Do I think that there should be criminal charges? No, I don't think there should be criminal charges. I think there should be criminal charges if a person takes the life of another person, for example, in the unborn victims, with the intent. But no, I do not think that there should be criminal charges if a woman has an abortion.
Absolutely against not. The doctor?
No, absolutely not.
Can you explain the logic of that to me? In other words, they're taking innocent human life. You're not disputing that. Why is that not a crime?
Because abortion is a woman having a medical procedure to terminate a life within her, and they usually do that based on emotion. Do I think that there should be criminal law for that happening? No, I do not. And that's just where I'm at personally.
Is that where right to life is?
National right to life or right to life
in
Montana?
Tell me both.
I wouldn't think that anybody would think that there should be criminal action involved for that.
Well, the history of the abortion legislation in the United States is just the opposite. 38 states prior to Roe v. Wade, if memory serves, I was in law school at the time the decision came down, had criminal sanctions for abortion. So if my memory is roughly correct, a majority of states made it a criminal violation. Let me ask you this. That the state you're saying should prohibit it but not consider it a criminal sanction.
Correct.
You say it's your impression that women make a decision based on emotion. What is the impression based on? What's the data that you have to back up that assumption?
I wouldn't exactly call it data, but when women go into an abortion clinic, they usually, and I'm not, you know, I obviously me not being a woman, I've never stepped into an abortion clinic. This is from women that work at the abortion clinic in their testimonies. When these women come into the clinics, they're undecided. They are emotional wrecks. They don't know whether it's the right decision or not.
What data do you base those assertions on?
I'm not basing it on data, Brian. I'm basing it on testimony from the women that work at like Planned Parenthood and their testimony up at the Capitol. That's what I'm basing it on.
Okay. We just interviewed Planned Parenthood. We're going to run the show prior to your show. The woman who is the head of Planned Parenthood in Montana articulates a different point of view in terms of the level of thought that the woman has gone into and her level of maturity in the decision. I'm not saying who's right. I'm just saying there's obviously a difference of opinion between the two of you. What's interesting to me is how hard it is to find data on abortion. I did some research. Let me just read some things here and get your reaction. This is from the Guttmacher Institute, the only one I could find that collected data on abortion. I'm not saying it was a definitive ever, but I did try to do some research. Half of pregnancies among American women are unintended, and 4 in 10 of these are terminated by abortion. Okay? 18% of U.S. women obtaining abortions are teenagers. Women in their 20s account for more than half of all abortions. 37% of women obtaining abortions identify as Protestant, 28% as Catholic. 61% of abortions are obtained by women who have one or more child. And I'm going to go back and ask you some questions about these. 42% of women obtaining abortions have income below the poverty level, which is $10,800 for a single woman with no children. I think that data is 5 years old. I believe that's 2010. It might be 2008. Another 27% of women obtaining abortions have incomes between 100 and 199% of the federal poverty level, which would mean for a family of three or four about $30,000. Finally, 3/4 say they cannot afford a child. 3/4 say that having a baby would interfere with work, school, or the ability to care for existing dependents. Now, that doesn't address the issue of whether they're emotional wrecks or not, or the emotional trauma of making a decision to terminate a fetus that you're carrying. But it raises some interesting questions. One, in terms of your organization, do you accept the data that women living in poverty are more likely to want abortions because they think they can't afford the child or it will damage the life of other children? Is that part of your approach to the problem or not?
No, it's not part of my approach to the problem, but let's look and see where that data came from. The Guttmacher Institute is a leg or an arm of Planned Parenthood.
So you disagree with the objectivity of the data?
I don't know if I thoroughly disagree with it. I might question some of it.
Okay, that's
just because
fair.
Of the source.
Does it make sense to you that let me give you an example. I was talking with Sarah Corbley, who is in charge of child health and human services for the state of Montana, about foster care. In the state of Montana today, as we speak, we have 2,900 children in foster care who have been determined by a court to be an imminent risk of harm or abuse. And 433 are eligible for adoption. It's a number that's gone up 60% in 2.5 years. There's a high correlation between low income and these realities. It would seem to me that if you care about the fetus, you care about the child. Is that an unfair assumption?
No, that's fair.
Okay. So does your organization have any positions on what we should do to minimize poverty? If this is remotely accurate, women are saying having another child will make the life of our existing children worse. We just can't do it. That's a logical conclusion if you're in that situation. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, so what does your organization have to say about the issue of poverty or reducing poverty or giving these people assistance?
Our organization has never really come out and had a statement dealing with that or a position, but I can tell you back in 2009 and 2011, I worked with then State Senator Ryan Zinke and also State Senator John Brueggemann, and I was actually, because that's always a big thing, okay, you know, the right to life guys, you know, you don't want the women to abort their babies. Do I think that these same women, do I think that contraceptives should be made available?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I think contraceptives should be made available.
Does your organization lobby to increase access of sex education and contraceptions among the broad public and in schools? Is that part of your mission? Because you've said personally that reflects your point of view. Do you lobby
No, we
that?
Do not. I actually did lobby against a sex education bill in 2000. It was either 11 or 13. Yes, I did.
Lobbied against?
Lobbied against one. That is correct. But as far as contraceptives go, no. As a matter of fact, I was approached by the Democrat who was carrying the bill to make it so contraceptives were available in the CHIPS program, and you know, I didn't have an issue with that. Also, to make it so nurses could prescribe contraceptives, I didn't have an issue with that either. But contraceptives is not our issue. RU486 is our issue, which is an abortifacient, but contraceptives are not.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking about the moral issue of abortion with Greg Trude, Executive Director of Right to Life of Montana. Now, someone might say, if one thinks abortion is wrong, morally wrong, criminal or not, a serious moral wrong, one would want to reduce abortions. And one way to reduce abortions is to encourage accessibility of contraception and sex education so kids, some of whom are getting pregnant as early as 15, understand what's going on and how to prevent it. So my question is, why wouldn't your organization join, let's say, in this particular area with pro-advocates of sex education and contraception like Planned Parenthood and say, we disagree on abortion fundamentally, but we want to reduce the numbers. Let's team up and get more funding and education for those purposes because it will reduce the number of abortions.
That's a good statement by you, basically saying that sex education, the correct sex education, and I thoroughly agree that the correct sex education program would actually help reduce abortions and make kids more aware, absolutely, and also the availability of contraceptives. And, you know, obviously we're under a time constraint. I'm not going to get into the issues that were involved with that one sex education bill.
But sure.
I can tell you that one of the issues has always been, is, okay, you write to life people. You want people to keep their babies. Well, how are you going to help those women who keep their babies? And that's what I was referring to before, as I had worked with Zinke and Brueggemann, and we were trying to get some funding to make it so the women that decided to keep their babies could have access to some funding for them, for example, for child care. Or let's say you got a young girl, she's 19, 20 years old, she's pregnant, she decides to keep her baby. Should she have some help? Absolutely. If she wants to go to Great Falls University, you know, what is she going to do with her kid? Absolutely, there should be some funding out there to help those young women out.
Okay, now you're a professional, respected lobbyist in the Montana legislature, so I can ask you specific questions, I feel, appropriately. If society takes the position that it is illegal against the law, using the power of the state to enforce that one way or another, doesn't it make sense that the state would say, the same people advocating the state take that position, that they would say, what you just said, but more broadly, if you have a child, we will assure that child has adequate food, shelter, and clothing, and the mother too? Or do you not agree with that position?
I agree with that.
What do you
Absolutely.
Do about it as a lobbyist? Because clearly some abortions are caused by women who look at the money, and Montana is a poor state economically, the 48th or 47th poorest state in the country. Clearly, some abortions are caused by this financial strain. Is it part of your lobbying mission to convince the Republican majority in the House and the Senate that we ought to have a program that if a woman carries a child to term and meets certain financial criteria, that they are guaranteed food, shelter, clothing, and medical care?
It was not part of my lobbying efforts. In the past several sessions, it was in 2009 and 2011.
That and why is actually, not? Why not now? Because the moral issue is the same. It hasn't changed since 2011.
You know, I'm just going to go back to 2013 and 2015. The dynamics of the legislature changed.
Okay.
And because of the change in the dynamics of the legislature, sometimes we have to be smarter than the average bear. And I knew that there were certain bills that had a chance of getting through, and there were certain bills that didn't have a chance of getting through. For example, 2013, finally, after six sessions and 10 years, I got the Unborn Victims Bill through, and the governor let it go into law. So now women that are beat up and are pregnant and the baby's killed, it is murder for killing that baby. It took me six sessions. So, you know, as a lobbyist, I have grown and I have realized that depending on who the governor is, depending on who runs the Senate, who runs the House, there's certain bills that are going to work and there's certain bills that are not.
You have forgotten more about the Montana legislature than I'll ever know, but I do kind of follow it, all right? And in the last couple of sessions, there have been alliances between Democrats and quote-unquote moderate Republicans that have gotten things through, like Medicaid expansion, to the surprise of many people. I'm hearing you say that the idea of proposing that women who are in stressed financial circumstances and decide to carry a pregnancy to term, despite the financial strain that will place on the family, is not politically feasible in the current legislature. Why would that prevent you, or not you personally, Montana Right to Life, from allying with organizations that say, look, we all can agree that these children deserve serious support from the state, particularly because we're trying to discourage abortions? Why would that not be a priority of your organization if you're sincere, that not you personally, your organization, about the right to life of the fetus, the right under the Declaration of Independence to life, not just and to pursuit of happiness? I'm confused.
Yeah, you are a little confused this morning, Brian. You might need another cup of coffee. As I said, sometimes you have to be smarter than the average bear, or God gives us wisdom, and that wisdom is, I knew, for example, I'm just going to take this last session. Look at the House Appropriations Committee. chaired by Nancy Balance. Great woman, nice woman. Do I think that a funding bill would have gotten through to add funds to whatever account we could have come up with? No, I don't think so.
Okay, I appreciate the pragmatism, and I do as a former politician. But at a certain point, we're talking about a fundamental moral issue, and I think you will not dispute my point that to you and many people, discouraging abortions is a profound moral issue and an important one. So why not fight the fight, even if you're going to lose it, to begin to educate some of these people who tend to vote against government expenditures automatically? They want to reduce the size of government, many of whom are pro-life.
And I'm going to go back a little bit about, you know, what you said there. That was really a pretty broad statement. As the lobbyist for Right to Life in Montana, I have never pushed for any kind of bill that would thoroughly stop abortion. And it is not in my place to tell a woman not to have an abortion. I believe that as a lobbyist for Right to Life, what I push is bills that educate young women, bills that educate the public as to what abortion is, so people, these young women can have a true educated, what's the word I'm looking for?
Judgment and informed
yes,
judgment.
Yes, exactly. Their total informed consent, informed of all the information and all the parameters and all the dynamics and all the complications involved with having an abortion.
The data shows, this is not from the Guttmacher, this is United Nations data, that the U.S. infant mortality rate per 1,000 live births is 7 dead children, prenatal and within the first year of life. In Canada, it's 5. In Cuba, a poverty-stricken nation, it's less than 5. It's 4.6. The difference is all pregnant women in Canada and Cuba are provided with prenatal nursing care to assure adequate nutrition, exercise, and to spot problem pregnancies and take early advanced care. We do not provide that service in the United States. Isn't that something that should concern your organization?
Absolutely.
Does it? Is it tangibly manifested in legislative proposals?
No, it is not.
Why not?
Because that's not our deal. Our deal is we are an organization. Some people call us one issue. We're really two issue, and that is to try and prevent abortions, to try and prevent the large amount of number of abortions that occur in this country every day by educating women as to truly what an abortion is about.
Okay, and I'm hearing you say, and I'm trying to put words in your mouth, that mission does not include proposing public policies which would lead to many women saying, you know what, with that kind of state support, I can have the child. The mission does not include that.
Yeah, our mission does not include that. However, I'm not against that mission. I am thoroughly in favor of that mission.
Greg Trude, I very much regret to say we're out of time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.